Well, certainly we are seeing a battle between Wall Street and Capitol Hill, or Wall Street and Washington, and so far, Wall Street does not appear to be winning. The question really is, with 30% of Americans, barely even 30% of Americans supporting this plan, how could it be a surprise to Wall Street that this would not go down to defeat? Well, the accusations from the Secretary of the Treasury, Hank Paulson, and other economic policymakers is that the credit markets are frozen and there's very little that can be done until a bailout is passed. Henry Paulson does have some tools in his toolkit, though.
Our toolkit is substantial but insufficient. Therefore, I will continue to work with congressional leaders to find a way forward.
Secretary of the Treasury Henry Paulson speaking yesterday. David Weiss joins us now. He's the chief economist for Standard & Poor's. David, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
So in the wake of all this stalling on Capitol Hill and the going back to the drawing board that presumably is going to need to be done, what can the Fed and the Treasury do now to free up credit markets? I read yesterday that $100 billion in commercial paper has just vanished from the market, and that's got to affect businesses all over the world, really.
Well, there's just no way to get loans right now because banks are caught short because they don't have the capital anymore to make the loans. The securitization markets are frozen up. No banks are willing to lend money to other banks, much less anybody else.
So what can the Fed do to turn this around in lieu of Congress taking any action at all?
Well, to be blunt, it's already done just about everything it can do. It's tried to put in these liquidity facilities to get money into the banks. It's tried to buy up as much of the paper as possible to try to keep things moving. It succeeded in sort of a minimal way, but, you know, I think they're running out of tools.
The credit markets remain frozen. The steps that the administration has taken without needing Congress's approval hasn't really worked. What I'd like to do is empower people who spend a lot of time looking at maybe market numbers to forget about the market for a minute. And what are the chief indicators of the health of this credit market? Because it is much larger than the stock market. It's probably much more important to the Main Street economy. What do you watch for to determine whether the credit markets are frozen or liquid?
Well, generally, you look for what banks are paying to lend to each other, and those levels are very high. They're still paying about 2 percentage points above the federal funds rate, which is normally pretty much what banks pay to lend to each other. You're now paying about 6%.
Wow.
And those kinds of levels are, about 4%. I'm sorry, it was 6% last week. And it's those levels are very high, and it makes it very difficult for banks to get the liquidity in that they need to make loans.
Now, that's the so-called LIBOR rate, right?
Yeah, this is the difference between LIBOR and Fed funds, or they also use the TED spread, which is the difference between the LIBOR and the Treasury bond yield, and that's running even higher right now.
Now, another indicator is the amount of interest that the Treasury is getting for bonds. I mean, the yield on the Treasury bond hit at a certain point yesterday, it seemed on the one-month bond, zero, which, if I'm not mistaken, means that if you put inflation into the mix, banks are paying the federal government to just keep their money safe rather than lend it out?
Yeah, basically, banks are willing to accept nothing in order to get a Treasury security, which is amazing. It's only happened 3 times in history, the last time being World War II, when there just wasn't much of anything else to buy.
I mean, that's the equivalent of a bank basically taking the cash home in a shopping cart and putting it in a mattress, right?
Yeah, remember, it's not just banks buying these Treasuries, though. It's individuals, it's money market funds, everybody. Yeah, they're saying, look, we want safety so much that you don't even have to pay us anything to take our money. Just promise to give it back.
All right, so Lehman Brothers spent week after week after week at the discount window, we were told, when the Fed eased up the ability to get money directly from the Fed if you were an investment bank, something they'd never done before, and it still didn't save Lehman Brothers. How come the federal government, which has something on the order of $900 billion at the Federal Reserve to play with, and they can actually print money as well, why can't this money be used to loosen things up?
The basic problem, the Federal Reserve can lower the cost for the Treasury to borrow money. They can lower the federal funds rate. But that doesn't directly affect the rate that banks have to pay to each other or the banks have to charge to everybody else. This is very similar to the problem that Japan got into in the early 90s, where the banks took big losses, their capital base was eroded, they couldn't make loans. And even though the Bank of Japan took interest rates down to zero, they still couldn't get loans out into the market, and the Japanese economy was stagnant for 10 years.
For 10 years. But I mean, that's really the scary part.
Why doesn't it help banks and the rates that they charge one another to borrow money if there's more money in the system?
Well, there's more money in the system, but it tends to flow only into the extremely safe assets, which basically means U.S. Treasuries. So Treasury rates go down to zero, and then you hit a limit because it's hard to push on that string any harder. Plus, banks need a certain amount of capital in order to make loans, both by regulation and just by reality. They don't have that capital right now to expand their lending base.
Well, let's elaborate on two points before we go. The Japanese analogy was also a bubble that burst when real estate in Japan burst. So it's similar to what's going on in the United States. And the 10-year-long recovery is actually pretty sobering. Do you think the fact that this is a real estate bubble that began all of this in the U.S., again, bodes ill for a speedy recovery?
Yeah, in Japan it was mostly commercial real estate rather than residential, but even residential home prices are now 25% below where they were 10 years ago. And the stock market's trading at one-third what it was 20 years ago.
Wow.
So it's not a good analogy to make. I don't think we'll make, you know, I think we've got more tools to fix this than the Japanese were willing to use, but you know, they pulled out all the stops once they got into that trap.
Now, the other thing is, if you talk to Ron Paul or people who are, kind of monetarist radicals, they say that, you know, what the economy needs is a standard to back up this paper, and that what the turmoil is that's going on right now is the economy looking for something of real value to price risk and borrowing rates and all that sort of thing. Is that what we're seeing here, that the market looked for American real estate as the kind of basic value whereby everything could be priced from, and now with that gone, they're looking for something else and they're not really finding it?
Well, I think that's simplistic. The fact is that they're looking for, they need a standard of value. The U.S. dollar has provided that standard of value, but now they're not sure getting their money back. And obviously, if they're not sure getting their money back, they don't want to shove any more cash over here.
Right. Well, as they say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can't make a bank lend if it doesn't want to lend. And that's the situation we're in. David Weiss, thank you so much for explaining that for us.
Yeah.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.